Greetings and love. Welcome to the African American Studies channel. I'm your host, James Stansel, on the New Books Network. And today I have the great pleasure of working and talking with Ben H. Winters. He is a national best-selling author, and he wrote the book Underground Airlines, which talks about a kind of an alternate future where slavery still exists in some southern states. So this is really interesting, and if you're questioning his motivations for writing something like this, listen to this interview. You'll find that he is very genuine, and he has some specific goals he's trying to accomplish with this book. So give it a listen. Greetings, and welcome back to the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. I'm your host, James Stansel, and I have the pleasure of being here today with a national best-selling author. He's well-known in the science fiction world, and we're going to make him known all over the entire world after this interview here. His name is Ben H. Winters, and he wrote the novel Underground Airlines. How are you doing today, Ben?
Doing all right, James. How are you?
We just talked offline about it. I'm in Houston, but I'm hanging, right?
You're above water, yeah.
I have everyone in Houston in my thoughts. But thank you for asking. And yes, Ben contacted me, before he did the interview and asked how we were doing here in Houston. So definitely, Ben, I thank you for that. It definitely shows your compassion as a human as well as a writer.
You got to be compassionate as a writer. It's like rule number one. In the top five rules.
And so, mostly on African American Studies channel, we talk with a lot of scholars and researchers who write nonfiction works. But, one of the writers that I interviewed told me, he said, James, you've got to check out this book by Ben H. Winters. It's called Underground Airlines. It sounds like exactly the kind of thing you'd be interested in and your audience would be interested in. So that was enough for me. I reached out to Ben H. Winters, and I tell you, she was absolutely right. Tony Presley Sano is the scholar who told me about that. So shout out to Tony up there in Michigan. But yeah, she told me about Ben's work, and she was absolutely right. And I'm glad I got you on the show today, Ben. And before we get into Underground Airlines a little bit, and we'll explain the name and kind of what it's all about, and you certainly can do some of those things. But just give us a little bit of background about you, Ben. Your personal history, kind of who you are and what got you interested in this topic.
Boy, oh boy. Well, I'm a novelist. I've written, and it's funny, I am a sci-fi novelist, I guess. I think of myself as just as much of a mystery novelist as a sci-fi novelist. My first book that kind of got some attention was a thing called The Last Policeman, which is a murder mystery. It's a murder mystery. It's about a detective who's solving a murder, even though the world is about to end. Mm-hmm. There's an asteroid that's going to come and destroy all life on Earth. And the sort of the point of the book is, well, why is this guy solving crimes, even though the world is about to end? Wow. So it's sort of an existential murder mystery. Mm-hmm. But then, if you put a giant asteroid in your book, that's a science fiction book, whether you like it or not. So I started to get some attention in the sci-fi community, which is wonderful. Anyway, that was a trilogy. And then after those books, I was sort of looking around, wanted to do next. And I did really like this. I like this working in this genre of using the mystery genre, but sort of setting it on its head in different ways, the sort of alternate history thing. And then meanwhile, you're talking about compassion, as a human being, aside from being an author, I live in America and I'm a person. And I, like many Americans, have been continually shocked and startled and upset and by the incidences of violence against the African American communities, particularly by the police. There have been since I've been an adult, and then even more certainly more recently, starting with Trayvon Martin, I think was the one that set a lot of people who don't normally pay attention to these kinds of things, got a lot of people's attention and became for good reason. That was a terrible murder. That boy. And then there was since then, obviously, and before then, but there have been a series of very high profile and very sad and of these incidents, and more than sad, sad, but also puzzling and distressing to everyone as Americans when we go, why is this happening? How can this continually be happening? Mm-hmm. And that became something that I guess, like a lot of people, I was following the news and then it sort of started my wheels turning as an author and going, well, what is a way that I might approach this? When you're a writer, the things that you were thinking about as a person are not distinct from the things you were thinking about as an artist, And so, but then I have, there was a, I think a sort of hurdle I had to get over is that I'm a white American, you know, so mm-hmm. this isn't my community that is being affected. You know, of course, it's my community as an American,
which is, I think,
an important part of this conversation is white Americans not letting ourselves off the hook and saying, well, this is something that is happening in black communities. So mm-hmm. therefore I can sympathize, but I don't have to actually activate because this isn't mm-hmm. my people, you know? And I think it's important to take a bigger sense of what is my people. You know, my people are the American people. So, which includes, you know, my black brothers and sisters and my black friends and my, you know, black
Absolutely.
Community. So anyway, I was really struck, and I'm still struck by the fact that when we talk about these things, we tend to very quickly get into, and certainly with Trayvon Martin, but then also, especially with Michael Brown and Ferguson and mm-hmm. and Eric Garner and Staten Island, we tend to start talking immediately about what are ways that we could prevent these specific incidents from happening. Well, maybe we need more body cams, or mm-hmm. we have to find ways to root out bad cops from black neighborhoods, you know, these mm-hmm. bad apples, or, you know, it's just anti-bias training, which all these things are good and important. But there tends to be this huge missing piece from the conversation, which is that this nation was founded as a slave state. And for 200 and more years, we were buying and selling human beings, and those people were dark-skinned people. And here we are today, and in many ways, we are living out that legacy, you know? And I think that conversation, for obvious reasons, is very difficult to have, you know? And we tend to avoid it. So because I had written these alternate histories in the last Policeman series, and because this is the issue I was thinking about, and I'm still thinking about, mm-hmm. I guess I had this notion of what if I were to write a book in which I sort of collapse our history? And so that's where I came to Underground Airlines, which is a mm-hmm. book about a contemporary version of the United States.
Right.
In which the Civil War was never fought. Mm. And there was still slavery practiced in four Southern states. Mm. And it is a way of using fiction, particularly using crime fiction, to think about reality, you know, to say, how different is this reality from the reality we actually live in? And right. it's just another way of talking about the truth. You know, that's, mm-hmm. I forget whose quote it is, that fiction is the lie that tells the truth. Like we, the made up world, but it is a mirror of our own reality, you know?
And you're not in any way glorifying the South or the Civil War, saying that you wish the South would continue into today's world. You're just
God
saying what would
damn,
happen.
I hope not. I hope if anybody reads this book and comes away with it going, yeah, this is pretty good. This is great. You know, I wish things were more like this. And they have grievously misread my intent. I don't think
they couldn't have read the book and thought.
Yeah,
that.
They couldn't have read them. And I think it's interesting because very much the point of the novel is to not just to criticize racism, although obviously it is, and to point out and sort of highlight the fact that the historical evil of slavery is still with us in the contemporary evil of racism. These are not mm-hmm. two separate things, right? Okay. What we live with today is the lineage, the legacy of the evil of American slavery, right? And we can't, and I'm not saying these thoughts are original to me, but like we can't overcome we can't in any serious way address these issues mm-hmm. without grappling with the past, without thinking about mm-hmm. how it came to be that we're still living with these institutions and attitudes. And so I do, and I have contended with this and talking about the book and the publicity about the book, and it's in paperback now. It's already been over a year since the book came out, but certainly, and with good reason, people look at a book like this and they go, oh, for, you know, with skepticism, with a little bit of wariness and saying, well, is this kind of work, is it just a fun thing of saying, oh, wouldn't it be cool or interesting if things had turned out differently, mm-hmm. you know? And I hope if I've accomplished nothing else that the book is not just it's not just using our terrible past as an excuse to write this kind of fun crime story. That in fact, it's the opposite of that. It's the inverse of that. I'm trying to use my ability as a crime novelist, as a mystery storyteller, to sort of get into and to engage with these very important issues, which are
Absolutely.
unfortunately remain very timely, you know?
Right. And if people know anything about your work, which you mentioned, you know, previously here during our podcast, where they look you up and research, you know, anything that you've done, Ben, they see that you are a writer in that mystery genre. You write about crime. So this is just another way, exactly as you said, to, you know, kind of address some of these issues, you know, in a different way. It's not like you just kind of woke up one day and decided, hey, I'm going to get paid off of writing about, you know, slavery and those kinds of issues. I mean, this just kind of goes in the same line of the things that you've already been writing about.
Right. And the thing is that, like, I can't, even as I say that, I can't blame anybody for being, like I said, wary or skeptical. Or dubious, you know, and looking at a publication like this and saying, well, wait a second, in part because there is a long history in this country, as your listeners will know, of artists, and particularly white artists, using Black characters and black historical themes in ways that are really reductionist or racist themselves, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, obviously I hope if you read the book, it's obvious that I labored very hard to not be in that tradition, you know, to make sure that my characters were fully fleshed and my story was not exploitative. But, I don't ask for anyone to give me the benefit of the doubt either. I would hope that someone would read the book first and say, oh, hold up. You know, this book does have, a contribution to make to sort of the conversation about the connection between slavery and contemporary racism, and is done in a way that is not stereotypical or vulgar, you know, crass.
Absolutely. And if you're just checking in, or you know, you're really engaged in the stuff that Ben's saying here, we're talking about his book Underground Airlines, and the author is Ben H. Winters. He's an Edgar Award winning author. He wrote The Last Policeman trilogy, and now we're interviewing him on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel, about his book that is, again, the same line of work that he's done before, you know, kind of mystery, thriller, you know, crime, but it has this added twist of existing in an alternate world that would exist where slavery still exists, at least in some states in the world today. So Underground Airlines, and it's published by Mulholland Books.
Yes.
So, yeah. So Ben, maybe just tell us a little bit about, you know, you don't have to, please don't give the book away for us, because we want them to read the book. But, you know, kind of give us a feel for what the book was, you know, is about. And then maybe talk with us about, you know, about the title, why you chose that title, and, you know, how long a process did it take for you to write a book like this? Because it's a little different writing a fiction book than an academic book.
Yeah. Well, so to answer your first question, the sort of basic premise of the book, as we've said, is that it's contemporary America. I guess the book is set in 2016, there was never a civil war. Lincoln was assassinated before he could be inaugurated, and then there was a compromise measure passed in 1860, as there had been, as we know from our American history,
in reality,
many compromise measures passed. Before then, you know, in the Constitution itself, there's the compromise that allows for continuation of slavery and the Fugitive Slave Act. And then there's a compromise in 1820, a compromise in the Missouri Compromise, and so on. So basically, my book imagines that compromise continued to be found down to the present day. And the Fugitive Slave Act is still in force, allowing, again, as your listeners will know, this is the African American Studies channel, you'll know about the horrible history of the Fugitive Slave Act, that, you know, that enslaved people who did manage to escape to the North were not yet safe, because it was the responsibility of local law enforcement and the U.S. Marshal Service to recapture them and send them back. So the hero, or very anti-hero of my book, I guess, is himself an escaped slave who has been captured by the U.S. Marshals and turned into an undercover agent. In exchange for his own continued freedom, he is capturing escaped slaves. So he is a villain in a way. He has made a terrible compromise. And there again is that word compromise, which is kind of the theme of the book. What compromises does he make? Do we all make, including very much the white people in the book, who allow themselves to live with the fact of ongoing slavery, as many white people now allow themselves to live with the fact of ongoing racism, and of course, you know, all kinds of xenophobia and nativism in this country. So anyhow, in the book, my hero, basically, he's engaged in trying to recapture this one particular enslaved person, who then turns out to be part of a larger conspiracy. And so it sort of, the book kind of walks along the path of a Manhunter book, a particular kind of mystery novel, where we have one person who's looking for another. But as it walks that path, it engages, hopefully in a serious way, in a way that is affecting with these more serious issues of the history of racism in this country, and the way that the government in particular treats citizens of different colors and different classes.
Absolutely. So yeah, that's a very enticing and interesting overview there. Definitely should get some people's attention and get them interested in this book. And
as what else you asked? You asked, how long? What the process? This book took me a couple years to write. I would say all told, including the sort of final edits. It was a few. I guess I was writing it between mid 2014, and then it came out in 16. So a couple years. And it was very much informed by current events. And it's unfortunately the topic has not gone away. You know, Michael Brown was shot while I was writing this book, and then the week this book came out in 2016, Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge and Castile was shot. Were both shot. So it is this topic. people's lives. This topic doesn't go away.
It's very relevant.
Very relevant. Yeah, it's tragically relevant. And like I like to say, the book it's an alternate history that is not alternate enough. And there are passages in the book where my hero reflects on the fact that although he is a government agent, although he is technically free, he says something like all African American men, I am never totally safe. Walking the streets of this country or driving my car in this country, I never feel entirely like I am free. And I said, I'm white. That is not an experience that I share from my life. I have never had the experience, James, of driving a car in this country as a black man and feeling whatever sense of danger of passing a state trooper or I've never, there are cases that we read about where someone will stop to because their car breaks down and they're waiting for AAA to come and they end up getting shot by the police. And those aren't experiences that I have to fear, and I don't have to tell my children to be careful in their interactions with the police in the same way that that a black mom or dad does in this country. Mm-hmm. So this writing this book then was an exercise not only in historical research and in this sort of artistic imagination, but also what I think is a crucial sort of calling to all of us as Americans, which is to try to empathize with the experience of those who are not like us, particularly those who have been on the other end of the historical relationship between oppressed and oppressor in this country. So I think what you will hear a lot of people say when they dismiss the concerns voiced by those who Black Lives Matter activists, or even just people saying, well, we still need continued affirmative action in this country. You hear people with my color skin say, well, yeah, but slavery was a long time ago. And I guess the whole point of this book, if you could boil it down to one sentence, would be slavery was not that long ago. And the things that we are dealing with now are of recent vintage. So we're not talking about reparations for something that happened, 250 years ago, just because we're talking about it. And we're talking about ending racism now. Things are going on now, discrimination is – so obviously you know as much about this as I do, and obviously I could talk about it forever. But I guess the book – it's so important to me when I talk about this book to talk about the issues surrounding it more so than any other book. I want to make sure people understand the extent to which the book is not an exercise in exploitation, but rather, like all books should be in one way or another, it is a political object. It wants to have some voice in the world.
Absolutely. And that book is Underground Airlines. And we're on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. I'm your host, James Stansel, and I'm here chopping it up with Ben H. Winters.
I love that expression.
Yeah, from the West Coast, and I'm down here in Houston. And if anyone questions, if anyone just kind of sees the name or read a little bit about Ben's book and say, oh, here's another guy trying to get paid off of that slave experience, listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
If you can't hear the passion...
Another white guy.
Yeah. You can't hear the passion in Ben H. Winter's voice and, what he's saying and how this is a meaningful project, for him, then you're not listening. I mean, this is not – and I can tell you, and I've talked with Ben a few times and exchanged emails with him and stuff. I mean, he's a legitimate guy, and, I mean, these are real issues for him. I mean, he chose to write about this topic. There are many other things he could have written about, but he chose to write about this topic. I mean, this is a best-selling author here. This is not someone who's just trying to get out there for the first time. And so
I've been thinking about that.
Go ahead.
Thinking about that recently. There's been a lot of, it's very easy. it's not for none of this is easy, but I've been thinking about like that whole issue of like it's such an important issue of the representation of African Americans in the sort of wider culture, what we call mainstream culture.
Okay.
And like this, there's obviously a big conversation right now about Confederate monuments and like, and then I saw this article was about like, what do we do with cultural monuments?
Mm-hmm.
Like for example, Gone with the Wind, right? A classic of American cinema that is nevertheless quite racist, you know, and also sort of valorizes the American South and valorizes mm-hmm. the Confederate cause and all that stuff. And it's like, well, do we just never watch that movie again? Do we tear down the, you know, do we burn all the prints? And like, obviously we can't. We can't simply ignore our history. But then right. there's this wider question, which like you reminded me of that when you were like, well, Ben could have written about other stuff. And I could have, obviously. But it's like, we look back at something like Gone with the Wind and we go, well, that movie was racist. But what we don't talk about then when we talk about that is what about the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of movies that were made around that time period that didn't have any black people, that didn't even acknowledge that black people existed. And like, and by which I mean the history of it is so much broader than individual pieces of culture that might offend us. There is this larger issue of like when this book came out, and there were people, and again, I can't deny people their skepticism and their wariness, but they go, why are you writing about this? What right do you have as a white author to write about black characters, to write about black experience? And I totally understand that. And my answer to that is long and complicated. It involves a lot of research that I did and a lot of like we talked about empathy and like,
right.
but I still understand the question. I don't deny anyone their right to ask that question. But at the same time, it's like, so what do we do? Do white authors then just could not write about black characters at all? Am I not allowed to give voice to a black character? Then we're in a dangerous territory too, where racism, the sort of exclusion, point I'm trying to make is we don't want to have just white books for white people and black books for black
not
people,
at all,
you know? And like, because it was weird, I remember a few weeks after Underground Airlines came out and there was these conversations about which I tried to participate in and be honest. And there was these conversations about, well, why are you writing about black people basically? Mm-hmm. Or like, how can you legitimately give voice to a black character? Mm-hmm. And again, I had my answers to that and I take them or leave them. Like I think any artist should have the emotional and the imaginative capacity to give voice to another human being. But then there was an interview with Jonathan Franzen for which he kind of got some grief because he said something like, someone asked him, why aren't there more black people in your books? And he said something like, well, I don't really know that many black people. And everyone was like, ugh, why, you know? So a little bit like, I think, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I think it's just really important that there are two sides. And I don't think that no one should be castigated. No one should be, I don't know. It's such a complicated question, but I think my bottom line is artists should have the right to write about whatever they want. But along with that right comes with a responsibility to do it with humility and with as much research as you can put into it so that you're not just sort of replicating old tropes and boring ideas and offensive ideas.
And I would say, you know, evaluate, critique, read each piece separately.
Yeah.
Right. And judge them that way instead of, you know, people just kind of painting a broad brush.
Yeah. Right? Well, we live in this world now. And I think that social media has accelerated this where that we are sort of rewarded for giving an opinion on things right away and making that opinion as strong and as absolutist as possible. Mm-hmm. So there are no points now for subtlety. And there are no points now for sort of patient reflection. Mm-hmm. You know, our culture it moves at a pace where so what happens then is anything that has the sort of vague possibility of being offensive or being contrary to what should, you know, we think is acceptable, we immediately condemn and cast out. And I think it's dangerous territory. It's dangerous territory because I think we need to, like, I guess we need to be careful that we don't paint with so broad a brush that we are lumping in, you know, someone who might write something that is slightly tone deaf or that contains something that, who, or an artist who accidentally or sort of not consciously includes a possibly stereotypical or an offensive character, or puts a black character in a sidekick role that makes us roll our eyes, you know, like that we don't paint those artists with the same brush, which we, I mean, we literally right now in this country have Nazis and KKK on the streets marching with torches.
Yes, we do.
So like we have to make sure that we are making distinctions between people who are on our side, you know, who are trying to engage, who are trying to be inclusive, and trying to have the conversation, but who might not know the right words, who might make mistakes in the way that they approach things, who might offend our particular sensibilities, as opposed to people who literally look at you as a black man or me as a Jewish man, frankly, and go, get out of my country, you know, give me my country back. And, or like, you just shouldn't have jobs. You shouldn't be able to own a home. You know, like that's a big difference. And it is all of our responsibility to keep our eyes on that difference.
Right. People who have honest intentions, even if they may not, you know, go about it the right way, versus people who have clearly evil intentions or, you know, have bad desires for lots of people.
You know, absolutely. That's scary stuff.
Yeah. And I would argue that even in, you know, we could get into a whole philosophical literary thing that we won't do on this podcast.
Yeah, but I'd like
you can learn. Yeah, you can. that's for you and I on that, off the air. But, you know, I feel like as a scholar that you can learn something from everything, even in the, you know, even in the worst portrayals and, the, you know, so on and so forth. You know, we shouldn't just, you know, put an X on everything. But that's a conversation for another.
Yeah, no, but I think it's a really important conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Underground Airlines, Ben H. Winters. And, you know, I'm just so excited. I'm like a big fanboy up here with the novelist Ben H. Winters, because I love his work. And I guess one of the things that I asked you earlier, you know, I like to ask this, you know, for everyone I have on a podcast, Ben, is just in your case, is probably a little more simple. But Underground Airlines, why did you choose that title versus another title for them?
Oh, sure. It's funny. Sometimes the titles take a long time. This one, the title came pretty early, and it's really just an extension of the metaphor. Right. You know, Underground Railroad was a network of, there was no literal railroad. Although if you read Colson Whitehead's excellent book, The Underground Railroad, there is, but, in reality, there was no Underground Railroad. There were human beings who created a network, and I've simply suggested in my novel that if that were to continue to the present day, that that metaphor might be updated, and they call it the Underground Airlines, and they refer to the escaping people as cargo, and the leaders of the different, you know, networks are called flight attendants and air traffic controllers and so on. So it's really just hopefully a kind of clever and interesting way to talk about that.
I thought so when I saw the title. It worked for me, Ben.
Thank you.
So. I just wanted to make sure people didn't think that there was some, you know, some airlines, Underground Railroad.
It's funny, like it was, that wouldn't work and it wouldn't be realistic. And I really, with this book in particular, it was very much my goal to make the book feel as real as possible. That this was, first of all, because I'm looking to show how our actual reality, is so troubled still by our slave holding past. So I wanted the book to feel real, and also just because I think for an adventure story in an alternate universe, the more grounded that universe feels, then the more terrifying the whole thing is. You know, like I want my readers to feel for the time period that they're reading this book like they're really living in this nightmare dystopian version of America, and which is the same trick I tried to pull off with The Last Policeman, where the sort of details of the oncoming asteroid, the upcoming end of the world, I wanted to feel like you're really living that experience.
Like it could be something that could happen today.
Yeah, which it could. I mean, the asteroid is fairly, it's not going to happen. You know, our scientists have pretty much figured out that that's not a realistic fear. But and that's the thing people asked about, you know, God, was that a scary book to write? But like the truth is, having written Underground Airlines, like, The Last Policeman was really about death, right? It was about the fact that we all live with the fact that one day we're going to die. And how do we deal with that? How do we order our lives? You know, and like the truth is that Underground Airlines was a much harder book to write because like death is, it's inevitable. It's organic. There's nothing we can do about it. Whereas racism, especially like institutional racism, you know, systemic racism, like this is within our control as a society to fix, or at least try to fix. And to like, so it's much harder to realize that we live with it nonetheless, because here we are, we have legislators and we have a system with which we are supposed to make policy to make things better for ourselves. And the fact that we seem unable to do that, and that people are suffering and children are born into a system that is unfair, it's so heartbreaking. You know what I mean? Like, whereas death, like,
I know what you mean.
There's no way that we can legislate against death, but what we could pass reparations legislation. We could fix, you know, we could pass legislation to end or to fight more actively against housing discrimination and like, and to balance the books in terms of inequality in our schooling. But the fact that those things are ongoing ills is much more heartbreaking than the fact that we're all going to die one day. Cause like, what are you gonna do about that? You know,
but we can do something about some of these issues that you're talking about. Absolutely. We can.
And we don't.
That makes it more of a horror movie.
Yeah, it is. Right. And like, which is actually one of the, you know, that great movie, Get Out, the Jordan Peele movie. Like he literally takes race, the horror of racism, and he makes it into a horror movie. Like, and I was trying to do something like that in this, which is take the mystery of our inability to fix these problems and make it into a mystery, you know? And I love that movie in particular, because I think it's, too often, I think culture that addresses slavery in particular is all about, like, you know, the triumph of the human experience. And like, this, there's both, they're very solemn and serious and moving, quote unquote, like movies or books. Whereas I think there's something really exciting and exhilarating about taking this theme and doing it as a horror movie or doing it as a mystery novel and like letting the big issues sort of be swept up with it, but not be the focus of it. You know, so that you sort of like let people think and reflect, especially white audiences, frankly, because, and this gets into a whole other thing, but like, I think correct me if I'm wrong, but I think for African-American audiences, that it's less of a surprise to go, to point out that we're still living with the legacy of slavery, you know, that African-American audiences will go, well, you know, kind of like, no shit, you know, no kidding, you know, whereas like, I just don't think it's something that white people are in general, and I've obviously with many, many exceptions, but it's not something that we are, that is as active as a day-to-day reality.
Right. You don't live with it.
You don't live with it. And so therefore it is easier to ignore but to do the thing that good, that well-meaning people do, which is to go, oh yeah, that's a shame. And every once in a while, I'm going to give $25 to the NAACP and that's my part. You know, like we need to figure out ways to encourage ongoing engagement. And I speak for myself as much as anyone, like I am not in any way, am I perfect, you know, but I guess, you know, cause I thought a lot about this when you think about the history before this, American history before the Civil War, there are plenty of people in the North and even in the South who consider themselves to be abolitionist, but who consider the problem to be something beyond their ability to really engage with, you know, to beyond their ability to solve. And so you sort of go, well, that's a shame. Slavery is really a shame. And hopefully one day we'll all figure that out. But in the meantime, you know, life goes on, you know? And I think that for all of us, both in terms of racism and in terms of a lot of other problems besides, that tends to be a very easy attitude to retreat into, you know? And I think so, if anything, that's what the book is about. It's about compromise. It's about complicity. It's about us allowing ourselves to allowing things to go on that we know are wrong. And that is, it is easier to not do anything about, you know?
Absolutely.
I read a great book, called Complicity. It was titled Complicity, and it was about the Northern states that profited off the slave trade.
It's called The Complicity. It's
called Complicity. Yeah, it was by the staff of the Hartford Current, I think, a newspaper staff, because they had done a whole series about how Connecticut, the shipbuilding industry and the insurance industry were built off of the slave trade. You know, in these northern states that thought themselves sort of morally above the crime of slavery, but at the same time, like Wall Street. You know what I mean? Like the money, so much of the early capital flows in this country came from the slave trade, even as the northern moralists were saying, well, we're so much better than those southerners because we're not buying and selling people, you know? And it's so like, that's all of us at one time or another.
But what I was going to say is if our podcast listeners, if you're enjoying this conversation and you're really into the things that Ben H. Winters is saying, you definitely want to check out his book. And it's the novel Underground Airlines. It's published by Mulholland Books. And Ben, you've got your own website, right? If people want to get in contact with you and share conversations, whatever the case may be, right?
Yep, benhwinters.com. And I'm not great about the internet. there's a contact me link on there. And there's a post on there if you scroll down a little bit with some of the books that I read when I was writing this book, which people, listeners,
oh, that's great,
in particular, might find interesting, just for some of the nonfiction. Yeah. There's a book called, well, Slavery and Social Death. I read The Half Has Never Been Told, which I think we might have talked about before.
Great book.
Edward Baptist. Yeah, that book was – actually the first thing I read that was, I found super moving, and I still have reread again recently, was just the article on The Atlantic called The Case for Reparations by Ta-Nehisi. Mm-hmm. And it's just like – and that really is tracing out the connections between the past and the present. And then a ton of fiction, obviously, Invisible Man and lots of Toni Morrison. You know, like I tried to – you know, I'm sure other authors tell you, these academic and fiction authors, like, it's all about reading. For me, writing is all about reading and just churning the stuff that I read into.
So you did your research.
I really tried. I read a ton when I was writing this book. And and research is always my favorite part of any book. It's like learning and learning and learning, and particularly with this book, because, again, as a white person in this country, I do not have the direct day-to-day engagement with the experience of racism, either individual prejudice against me or the sort of institutional obstacles to overcome. And so I think it was extra important in terms of both creating the world and in sort of deepening my own empathy to do a lot of that research, starting with slave narratives, frankly, and all kinds of African-American fiction and all kinds of histories, not only of slavery, but of sort of the post-slavery, the ways that the institutions of slavery sort of reformed itself in Reconstruction and afterwards. Oh, a great book called Slavery by Another Name, which won the Pulitzer, I think. Incredibly interesting book about, starting with, the prison, essentially reforming of slavery as by the arrest of thousands and thousands of African-Americans.
Chain gangs,
we're still, again, direct link. Here we are, you know, with the mass incarceration system. This is not something that we just made up, you know, that in the 80s, the Justice Department decided to do a big prison buildup. Like, this is all connected. The past is still with us. And, like, that is something that we as Americans love to turn our backs on, to say, well, it's equality. It's all about equality. So why are you asking for a handout? Why are you saying it doesn't start from scratch with each new generation. You know, we are the inheritors. And, like, slavery didn't end with the end with the end of the Civil War, and racism didn't end with the Civil Rights Act, and it didn't end with the election of President Obama. As obviously, since this book came out in July of 2016, we have seen a severe backlash against even the gains that we've made in the last 10 years, you know. Certainly with the new administration, the new Justice Department, you know, like, we're not going in the right direction right now. So, like, yeah, the past is very much still with us.
Absolutely. And one thing I'm going to ask you, Ben, because I know people in the audience are going to want to know the answer to this question. And we've talked about it a little bit offline. Are there any prospects so far for a film adaptation, television adaptation, so forth? I know you're out there in California.
Yeah. Anything? It would be for this book. It would be television. And actually, I have written a pilot script for this. So, and there has been some interest. Now, you may have heard a few months ago, HBO announced a show. You probably did hear, called Confederate, that has a similar theme. I think in their show, it's an alternate history where the South won the Civil War, I think. So that the fact of that show being in development, it makes it less likely that an Underground Airlines show will move forward. Although what I have discovered about Hollywood is you just never know. You have no idea. So I'd be delighted to get the opportunity to do this thing for TV. But on the other hand, I would be surprised. Just given my experiences in Hollywood thus far, it's so difficult to move anything forward. So especially with this other thing happening that got a lot of press, and you probably the press was not great for that project. So I think it will be a difficult needle to thread, I think, to bring Underground Airlines to the screen.
But what I will say though, Ben, is if the people demand it, then it can happen, right?
And so. Well, yes. Yes, that's
so. What I would say, hold on, Ben. What I would say is, if folk listen to this podcast and people reading Ben's book, if you are interested in seeing his book on television or whatever, contact some networks, contact some folk on Ben's behalf, and let's, you know, it can make a difference, Ben.
Yes,
I would love to see it, you know, visually, as well. So you never say never.
Yeah, I like that. Right? I like your attitude. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, there's something like. I love it as a book. I love it so much as a book. And like, Okay. You know, and I love the character so much, and I feel so, I guess it's been such a big experience in my life, both the writing of the novel itself and getting to do this, you know, getting to engage with interested readers. And particularly for me, there's been a real kind of moving experience of dealing with not only the criticism of the book, you know, having to do with, you know, me as a white author, but also then just getting into real, like, some serious and kind of powerful conversations with people I might not otherwise have talked to. And, like, so it's been like the whole thing has been a kind of, probably, I think, more so than most things I will do as an artist, it's been a really moving experience. So in a way, it's like I'm satisfied with that. I love that. And excellent. And bringing it to TV, because it's TV, it would just be such a whole other thing. And it would be so, it would get further and further out of my hands.
It would be a bit diminished.
Yeah, a little bit. And not to say, you know, I might turn around 6 months from now and be like, hey, James, I got great news, you know, but and that would be great. And then also I could, you know, continue, there would be a new chances to have this conversation with people, you know, but I guess because our world is so polarized and because there is, the conversations can be so hard, there's a part of me that's like, you know what, let's let the book be the book and be happy with that.
And I, you know, I would even say, Ben, and I don't know if you've had, cause I was a high school teacher for a long time, English and history. I would love to see, Underground Airlines as a book that's taught in history classes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, particularly like, yeah, at the AP level or even some English classes. Particularly I say history because that's something that we do in American studies and advanced level history classes. I kind of look at alternate histories and help the students learn what actually happened based on the things that could have happened.
I would love that much. I've gotten some emails, I think, from college level professors that are teaching it. That would make me so happy, and particularly because I really did try to do my research and get the, you know, it's funny, funny thing to say, right, in my alternate history, but to get the facts right, and I, particularly when I sort of spun out my scenario about how Lincoln came to be assassinated, you know, there's a real speech he gave in Indianapolis on his way to be inaugurated, you know, about halfway between Springfield, well, not halfway, but, you know, on the way from Springfield, Illinois to Washington, D.C., stayed the night in Indianapolis. He gave this speech. It was really controversial. And that really all really happened. So all I did was I made it a little more controversial and I made somebody kill him afterward, you know? And so I love the idea of a history professor going, all right, well done, Winters. You know, you got me. That would make me happier.
All right. And so the book is Underground Airlines. It's a national bestseller already. It's in paperback. If you're interested in purchasing the book, you know, when you come to our podcast page for New Books Network, you can click right through. You can go to Ben's website and you can click right through to our bookseller partner and purchase the book right there. Right. Is there an audio version?
There is.
Ben?
There is an audio version. And actually, I will give a good plug for the young man who did his name is William DeMeritt, who's a young actor who did the voice narration. He is fantastic. He is really great.
All right.
And I don't think this was an easy book to do the audio for, because the character himself plays a lot of characters. You know what I mean? He's an undercover agent, so he does a lot of voices. Right. He does a lot of, this guy, William, he nails it, I think. So if you are an audiobook person, I could strongly recommend getting the audio version for sure.
Yeah. Shout out to William DeMeritt there. Great job, young man.
I don't know. Yeah, he's terrific. So yeah, thank you, James.
Yeah. And you know, and I don't want to hold you all day, Ben. I know you're a family man. And you've got some things, you know, to he's laughing like, but you don't want to hold you all day. We can talk. You and I can talk offline for hour upon hour.
It's true. I want reading lists from you. I want you to tell me what to read.
We'll get into that offline. And definitely Folk in Houston. I'm going to be talking to Ben. I've already talked to him a little bit about getting him down to Houston so he can talk with us in person about Underground Airlines. But you know, that's a conversation for again. Offline, but I did want to mention Ben and ask you, what do you have in the pipeline? I know you're working on some things, or you know, anything that you want to share with the audience. You know, you mentioned some of your previous books, and they can go to your website if they're interested.
Yeah, if people like this book, the next one to read, I think, would be The Last Policeman, which is the first in a trilogy of alternate histories.
Right.
And then I'm just now finishing the first draft of what will hopefully be my next book, which I think is called The Book of the Missing, although I'm not sure yet. So that won't be out though until at least a year from now. And then I'm trying to get some TV stuff off the ground, but as we said, it is there are easier things to do. But I'm happy. It's a challenge. Yeah. So I'm working promoting this book still, and I'm working on the next one, and all is good.
That's good. Well, you know, Ben, thank you so much for spending some time with us on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. It's always my pleasure to talk with you and, you know, just to hear your passion for this book and just writing and just life in general.
You too, James. You give me energy. I'm glad to find you safe and healthy in Houston. And please give our love to your city. That's a tough road you guys are walking on now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're, of course, thinking about Florida now as well, because the time that we're recording this, Florida's also facing some hurricane challenges. So love from Ben H. Winters and James Stansel and the New Books Network for Houston and for the state of Florida, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for your time, James.
It's my pleasure. And again, the book Underground Airlines, Mulholland Books, and you can find it pretty much anywhere. I mean, it's in paperback now, audio. And, you know, thanks again to the author, Ben H. Winters, for spending some time with us today. And again, if you have any questions or thoughts or comments you want to share with Ben, you can reach him via his webpage, or you can send us something through New Books Network, and I'll make sure that it gets to him. And we're going to probably end it right here. Thank you so much, Ben H. Winters. If you can tell our audience goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So we will hear you, see you, and all those good things next time on the New Books Network. Listeners, peace and love, and God bless. Stay strong, Florida. Stay strong, Houston. All right, we are back. The New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. I'm your host, James Stansel. Just finished a great interview with Ben H. Winters, the author of Underground Airlines, published by Mulholland Books. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today, Ben H. Winters. Great interview. I think our audience is really going to like it. And if you guys want to get in contact with Ben H. Winters, or you want him to come to your town, or you want to talk with him a little bit about this book, definitely get in contact with him via his website. As you heard here, he's very open and a great person to talk with. So on that note, we're going to say goodbye, and I will look forward to hearing you and seeing you next time on the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. Peace and love.